Welcome to Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I am your host, Clarence Moy. I am joined by the other two M's, Joey Moser and Megan McLaughlin. And we are also joined by a very, very special guest, Patricia Clarkson, the most recently Golden Globe and Critics' Choice nominated co-star of HBO's Sharp Objects. Patricia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. What a privilege to be here. It's so exciting.
So can I call you Patty, or is that too informal?
Yes, please. Sure.
Excellent. I just realized. All right. Excellent. Well, again, as we've mentioned, you know, you've been nominated twice now for this role within the past week of your remarkable performance in Sharp Objects. You know, so congratulations for those nominations first and foremost. But you know, how does that feel with you in getting this recognition here for this series, which focuses so strongly on the female perspective of a lot of different ways, of mothers, of daughters, of just women within this small town? How does that feel to you to be nominated and recognized for this role?
Well, it's thrilling because I felt very proud to be a part of this project. I think it deals with some very serious issues. And it is, you know, three women that are not Wonder Woman, three women that are far from that. But I think it's valuable to tell the stories about imperfect women as it is to tell, you know, hope stories about heroic women. I think they all have value. And I was thrilled to be a part of a miniseries that was written by a woman, produced by women, starring women, you know, the great and glorious Amy Adams, and so I'm overwhelmed. You know, you just don't know. Awards are very difficult, and you know, they're not, I don't think anybody takes them lightly. They might say they do, but they don't. We love to be recognized, and especially for a project, when we love doing a project. I'm very close to everybody still on this project, and I feel that it honors everybody. It honors the great people that I worked alongside of, Eliza, remarkable Eliza, you know, Chris Messina, Matt Craven. I was so thrilled today to see Elizabeth Perkins get a critics nomination. She's extraordinary. You know, it was just a beautiful cast, and I feel that, you know, this is just a recognition, and it's a recognition of Jean-Marc Vallée, brilliant director. Gillian Flynn, every time we get nominated, it's Gillian Flynn is there because she wrote the thing. So it's a beautiful moment for all of us.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk really quickly about the first time that we actually see you. I think we get this really strong impression of Adora. I have to admit that as soon as I saw the first episode, I was like, please believe that I think every gay man in the world is going to dress up as Adora for Halloween. I think they should. I was like, I can picture myself wearing a pink dress and carrying around an amaretto sour.
Nothing but flattery. But anyway, sorry, what about the first time? Yeah.
Oh, no, I was just saying that you make such a strong impression there. Like, do you think that the audience is really prepared to see you play sort of a mother from hell kind of?
Well, you know, I think people were prepared to see me play a mother from hell. I But I think the beauty and the amazement of Adora is that she isn't really. She is so complex, so alluring, so screwed up in a way, so damaged, so fragile in ways that really you are illuminated much later. So you have to kind of take a ride with her. You have to outlast her. And I haven't quite had a character like that. You know, I'm very protective of Adora in an odd way because I think we must love the characters we play for all of their misgivings and traumas and idiosyncrasies. We must love them and want to play them in order to play them properly.
Yeah.
All of the stripes with all of, you know, with all of the warts revealed. And if there's any goodness, it must, of course, and must be there also, must be present. So I think, you know, Adora is by far one of the most complicated characters I've ever played, and I have a very large, long list of movies and TV I've done. And so I'm most thankful for these nominations, and because I think it cost all of us a little bit of ourselves playing these characters. They were highly demanding, and I'm glad that people, I think, ultimately really took the Adora journey. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I want to jump in and ask.
One of the things that. Oh, sorry.
No, I'm sorry, Megan. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I wanted to just jump in and ask one quick question as a follow-up to that. As you started looking, you know, of course, a lot of this character is on the page and in the original book, but as you started building this character and fleshing this out in your performance, to me, there's just so many echoes of great Tennessee Williams characters. Did you look at some of those female characters in those original plays to create her?
Darling. I played Blanche DuBois, the Kennedy Center, in 2014. So I know it so well. Of course, it has echoes of Blanche, and of course, that was also a monumental moment in my life to perform Blanche DuBois at the Kennedy Center. And yet, it was a place I didn't think I could ever go back to. I do think Tennessee Williams wrote Blanche in a certain way in order for the actress to actually have a nervous breakdown in order to play it. So it was traumatizing to perform that character 8 shows a week. And when I got back when I headed into Adora, of course there were echoes. There was a light dusting of Blanche everywhere in this. But yet, what was great is Gillian is such a beautiful, strong, powerful, unique writer. She is her own. It had dustings of Blanche, but it really is not Blanche. And having played Blanche, I know exactly what that is. And Adora is not Blanche. But there are shadings of Blanche here and there. But I think, in the end, Adora had to just come from a whole new, different part of me. It was demanding of me in ways that other parts haven't been and will never be. And so I had to take her day by day. I couldn't get ahead of Adora. I had to just look at it in small increments. Because it was too difficult to think the long run, you know. So I wouldn't judge her. I had to be very careful to never judge her, never.
One of Adora's character traits, or I'm going to jump in if that's okay. One of her complications or character traits is that she has Munchausen by proxy syndrome.
Yeah,
and I was wondering. There's a big gap between Marion and Emma. So how did Adora fill that void, that nursing, that need to nursing, Florence Nightingale type void, before Emma was born.
Well, I think she really desperately tried to be a mother to Camille, and that was failing. And I think she tried to fill that void with Camille, and I think she just, I think she tried to rely on her husband, but that was failing. I think a lot of the places she could go, she could have gone, were no longer viable. And I think for her, Emma was a godsend, was a gift. It was everything she needed. It was another child, of course, to, quote, take care of, and a child that was willing and able. And as sad as that is, she did get that child. Be careful what you wish for. So, you know, but I think it was a very dark period in her life, and you would think she would have maybe done soul searching, but I don't think Adore soul searches. Todd, I'm sorry. Somebody's trying to call me. We're going to let it. I know this is a call. That's not a call. Oh, it went away. No, it's not. And I'm afraid to hang up because sometimes this phone, it's very sweet who's calling us. It's gone away. Good. Bye. Sometimes my phone hangs up when I try to click it off. So anyway, I'm just saying is that I think in the end, Emma oddly saved Adore. Machiavellian as that sounds, right?
So speaking of Emma, I'm always very curious every time that I watch some of the episodes how much Adora actually buys the perfect angel that Emma presents to her.
Well,
does she buy every single lie that she tells her? Is it like a relationship that they sort of worked out?
I'm the smartest person in the room most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's able to compartmentalize very, very well. I mean, Munchausen by proxy, you have to be, in order to be successful at Munchausen by proxy, you have to actually be a very good actor. Because you are constantly creating these false scenarios that you're trying. And so I think that's all part of it. I think she, in some ways, she's able to kind of blithely dismiss some of her, probably some of her intuitions and some of her feelings about what really is going on with Emma. So I think it's
like
all
playing
part
a part
of the disease. I think it's all part of the same disease.
Yeah.
That's interesting because I think Adora talks to Camille about, you know, don't embarrass us and present the family in a light, almost like playing a part. And I know Adora had Camille at a young age. Do you think she was embarrassed by that? Does that feed into Adora's worry about
I think she had shame about Camille. I think she was married to a terrible man that she's never spoken about. You know, Amy has that line, you know, you've never told him, you never talk about him, you never know. I think there was shame involved. I think she was 16 or 17. You know, I think but I think, you know, Adora rises from the ashes. You know, I think Adora rises from the ashes. And I think she's a cat in more ways than one. And she lands on her feet. And I know you would see the end in the series now, but if the series were to continue, trust me, there's one big survivor out of this, and that would be Adora.
Oh, interesting.
I love that laugh.
Yeah.
So, looking at one of the more regrettably unsung performances in the show is Henry Searsney as your husband, Alan. And I love
Everett. Beautiful Everett.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the relationship there that's displayed on screen. What can you tell us about how you worked with him and how you built that relationship, and what do you imagine happens between the two of them off screen?
Well, again, I think it's very complicated. Some of it would remain private with me just because it's my private actor's work of how I really feel and what I really. But I do believe, they hit the jackpot by putting Henry in that part. Because I think a lesser actor would not have had the presence and the stamina. That is a very difficult part to play. You have to, make a mountain out of a molehill. You have to create this character that is largely in the shadow. And Henry is a really lovely, beautiful man. I mean, he's crazy handsome. who wouldn't want to be married to Henry? And I think she actually thought he was the perfect man. And that's exactly what Adora needed, was a lovely, kind, handsome man. And I think she was a good wife at times, and not so good at others, of course. And I think he tolerated the not so good time. And I think he tolerated her kind of separation of church and state. I think he just kind of said, I think he learned to live with Adora's, eccentricities and idiosyncratic behavior. And I think it made, endeared her, him even more to her, but I don't know that. I think there is still fondness there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think anything ever happened between Adora and Chief Vickery? Because
I know exactly what happened between Adora and Chief Vickery, but I'll never tell.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh my God! I love that.
That's a great answer.
There are certain things as actors, we just should hold tight. And
yeah.
I have all my own feelings and things about my daughter that died, about, Vickery, about, I have my whole set of, it's so deep and personal where I had to go for this long, for 5 months of my life, almost six. And I think it's important that as actors, I love talking about Adora and working on this project, but I think some things have to just remain our own.
Yeah.
But it's good.
Yeah. It's better than if we can all imagine it or, come up with our own thing and never know if it's the truth.
Look at the three men in this. Chris Messina, Matt Craven, and Henry. Could you get three hotter, sexier men in your life? No, I don't think so.
No. I would say no.
I'm not kidding you. It was a joy to be on the set with those three men. It really was.
Yeah.
It was a true, true joy. And they had to all play the girlfriend part. They had to all be the girlfriend. You know what I mean? They had to play what we as women have played for years. It's those parts that are not completely... Chris's part is and that, but still, they had to be in the parts that were less defined than ours, than the three women,
That's what Chris and I talked about today, actually. That's really funny. I talked to Chris earlier today about that.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing. I learned a lot from those three men. Very, very, very worked with all three of them. I'm thankful. I'm very thankful for that experience. And of course, the other great actors, male and female.
So I wanted to ask about that really powerful, intense monologue that you have, where Dora just flat out tells Camille, "I never loved you." Is there something that maybe a Dora, like, you know, keeps close to herself that she absolutely loves about Camille? Is there something that she would say is one of her personal favorite things about that particular daughter?
Well, I will say this. That's, again, a very complicated theme that I couldn't overthink. Take it for what it was. It was very important that it be as simple as possible. You know, remember in that scene, this episode before, there's that beautiful moment I have with Chris Messina where I say she's a rose, but not without thorns. I don't know if you remember in the door.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is a child that has given me tremendous pain and shame, I think, early on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Adora it's amazing. I've never had a moment more talked about in my career, I think. Maybe in Green Mile, when I put the beautiful necklace around Mr. Coffee's neck. I'm not really sure what to say about it anymore, except that I had to believe that it would help her to hear that. That it was simple.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was a gut punch to everybody, even though we knew it was coming. So it's the simplicity of how it's played is so beautifully done, even though the words of the subject is so horrific to hear.
So I think it's just a simpler. Was it brutal for me as Patty to have to say something like that? But I couldn't. I had to just. I kept it very simple. Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
I love that scene, actually.
Yeah.
It
is a great scene. So just one. One last question for you. I know you have to go, and thank you so much for your time. So between this and your work on House of Cards, it feels like you might be due.
Come on, I'm going to miss. Coming out, we're going to all miss James. Come on. Can I say kick ass on your show?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
We've said far worse.
I mean, Jane Davis is the epitome of kick ass.
Yes, she is.
The epitome. It was such a beautiful character, and I loved every minute of that character. Yeah, I did.
So those are heavy.
Sorry, what was going to ask?
Those are very heavy roles, of course, between Sharp Objects and House of Cards. We all loved Simply Irresistible back in the day. So is there a chance that you're going to be doing some lighter material?
No, and I did The Party, the Sally. Have you seen the Sally Potter movie?
I loved that movie.
Come on.
I loved that.
Sally Potter is one of the most intense women, brilliant women I've ever met in my whole life. But that was rather fun. I mean, I would love to do some more comedy, but I'm always just going to take the great part, whether it's comedic or dramatic. I want to be challenged. And my God, Adora. Top of the heap, and same with Jane Davis.
Yep.
You know, these were. I mean, am I not the luckiest gal in town to have gotten to two remarkable women, and antithetical to one another in ways, you know? But yes, I'm hoping. I would love to do a big funny comedy.
Yeah.
Maybe some big funny director will call me.
Well, we'll put the word out there for you. How about that?
Yes, please. Okay.
Well, Patty, thank you so much. This has been a tremendous honor and a fantastic conversation. And best of luck to you. And again, congratulations on all of your recent accolades for this role. It's extremely well deserved.
Thank you so much. Oh, thank you. Thank you, you guys. Cheers. And I think it's the more, I think the more the merrier. I think I always should talk about it at one time. Anyway, cheers, you guys. Be well. Okay.
Same to you. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Irresponsible. Call me unreliable. Throw in undependable too. Do my foolish alibis for you. Well, I'm not too clever, I just adore. Predictable. Tell me I'm impractical. Rainbows I'm inclined to pursue. Responsibly.